Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast.
Okay. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Josh. Yeah.
Great. Welcome to all of our listeners today. If you're listening to this, you are definitely watching this. You're definitely a language trainer. This is the profession we're working in. I've been working in it for 20 years and Richard pretty much near that. I think what I wanted to talk to you about today, Richard, was I've known you for 2 years now, I think. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. And ever since you left the school you're working with in Paris and you set it up, your company, and I've been following you pretty closely, we've been working together. And what's been fascinating to me is that you've been looking at some really new ways of improving the way you train your students.
You've sent me a list of questions, just to be clear about that we've got, like, you know, I don't know how many questions to get through, 7 questions to get through. I think we're going to cover most of what has been going on in the last 2 years, what I've been doing, what we've been doing together. And it's important to mention that the way I've been improving my teaching has come about because what you're doing with your company here in France is you're working with language training organizations and freelancers to set up training courses and basically to get the professionals in the market who know about a particular thing at the time that it's happening. So when there's a reform happening in France and you need to do more digital training, for example, then you came to me to try to organize workshops that we could do to show people how to do better digital training, to show people what platforms exist, what tools exist. And so that's your role. That's how we got to know each other. And that's actually how I've had access to a huge number of other trainers and schools over the last 2 years that have been telling me the different sorts of problems they've been having. And that's where a lot of these questions have come from, our conversations with trainers, that we can finally say, okay, we've got the main problem insight. We know what the problem is today with teachers trying to do work outside of class with their learners and trying to also make that digital. So get into the fundamentals of what it is to give learners work outside class and why we believe, after what we've been researching over the last 2 years, that today that has to be digital work. So that's where these 5 questions have come about. So have you got the first question there?
I do. Before we start, just tell me who you've been working with. You've been talking about schools and everything, but what kind of size schools, how many teachers, you know, just to give us a bit more background about who you've been working with.
It's been a big variety and different, you know, it's been really interesting seeing lots of different formats of training centers. Like, I don't know if people, because this will be going, you know, we're hoping this is international because we want to really help people and give advice to people based on the kind of learning that we've been doing here in France. So I don't know what sort of training organizations exist in other countries around the world. But here in France, the ones I've been working with have been, for example, anything from the small, very familial organization where it's ex-teachers who were freelancers, partnered up with another freelancer, got enough cash together to rent a small office. And then they've started hiring freelancers, some of them on contract, some of them continue to be subcontractors and freelancers. But you get this, like, these nice small teams of like 10, 15 people, 10, 15 teachers who are all working together, kind of like in an association, you know, to make the school work. So they all work very closely together. They all help each other developing programs. They all have their very own teaching technique and they can stick with their own teaching technique. They're not forced down a particular road in terms of how they should teach. So that's very interesting to work with people like that and to see how a pure freelance language trainer working on their own functions in a group. And then you have the kind of bigger operations where it's, you know, 40, 50 trainers, maybe higher, maybe 100 trainers, most of them on freelance and coming in 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week to work for this organization. So it's a very different way of me going in to try to help them because I'm actually talking to freelancers and trying to convince them to accept the company's way of doing things, the organization's way of doing things, even though they would much rather just carry on with their own individual teaching technique. Because, you know, language trainers is one of those things like coaching where everybody has their own way of doing things because it's not a regulated system. It's not a regulated industry. So there's no one way to teach a language as there's no one way to coach. If you say, like, I'm a management coach, an executive coach, there is no definition that would say, oh, I know what I'm getting when I bring you on. You know, you've got your own offer, what sort of things you do. And it could be things like confidence building, or it could be spirituality, it could be humanity, it could be, you know, there's loads of different things. Language training is kind of the same. You know, I focus on role plays, or I focus on communication, I focus on it being natural or not having any grammar in there, or having sort of structured lessons or unstructured lessons, or, you know, there's any numbers of ways to teach. And I find that in France, there's just, you know, any, you know, it's unique. Everybody I've worked with is unique, but we all have the same kind of common principles about teaching. We know what works, and we actually know what works from having trained ourselves, from having just been with learners and being constantly open and sensitive to what reaction we get. So we're using a technique that we think will work, and we just gauge the reaction that we get. And we use that to say, okay, that really works with a lot of different people. So that's one that I'm going to keep going, you know, I'm going to keep using that in the future. Or, oh no, that fell on its ass, and so I'm not going to use that again. So we've really, you know, there's a lot of material out there that we can read and that we can use to develop ourselves professionally. But there's no one thing where it's like, this is the book, this is the handbook of how to be a trainer, and if you follow all the principles in here, you're going to be a good trainer. That doesn't exist. There's like 10 different methods, and you can cherry pick different bits, or you can follow one particular method, but nobody will be able to say, well, that's definitely the way to do it. You know, everybody has a preferred way.
Well, I think that's an important point. And I think the one thing we've noticed together through my work with schools and teachers and you as well, is that having a mix of methods let the teachers get on with those methods within the face-to-face class is not something we're particularly interested in changing in our business, you know, because we like to help them sort of make better, but not change. What we're really interested in talking about today is things happening outside of the classroom, you know, ways of improving learner impact, ways of making the learner more satisfied, ways of improving, you know, language progression and skill sets outside of the class, because teaching is not just in the classroom. Teaching is, you know, if there's a professional relationship going on, then we both believe that that relationship should not just be 1 hour a week in a face-to-face class. We both believe that there should be much more going on. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, when you talked, like if I'm talking about teachers each having their own eclectic version of what it is to teach quality language training, although we're all working from the same principles, there's not much you can really bring to the table apart from new suggestions for activities to do in the classroom, or like a new way of designing a worksheet or something like that, that they could then take away if they want to and integrate that into their eclectic approach to teaching. That's fine, but can't come in and say, this is the way you have to teach in your classroom. You know, that would never work. And we know that. But exactly like you said, the one thing that we find is when we start raising the subject of, you know, this is a way that you could give your learners to do stuff at home, immediately everyone's like, yeah, but that won't work because, you know, my learners just, they don't have the time for that. They always tell me they don't have time. And so you have this kind of universally accepted excuse of my learners don't have time, which is the way that we kind of rationalize why they're not doing homeworks, why they're not actually doing outside of classwork, which is really important. And we're going to talk about that in question one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the issue there is, you're in denial about the fact that there's actually a more fundamental reason why the work that we're giving them to do outside of class isn't working. Because if they really genuinely didn't have time, well, then how do they make time to come to your face-to-face lessons? You have to accept that they do actually free up time for part of your training, and they don't free up time for the other part. That's not to say, oh, I have exactly 1 hour free every week. Like, that's just not possible. It's that people prioritize certain things over other things. So they prioritize your training over, you know, whatever, they ask their partner to go and pick up the kids from school, but they won't prioritize doing your homeworks, the stuff you give them to do outside of class, over, you know, something else to go in and do the shopping, or, you know, cleaning up or putting stuff in the washing or whatever, you know, typical adult learner has to do in their everyday life. So it's really more that they're not seeing your homework as a priority. And that's something we don't like to confront, that because we'd rather just think, okay, we did our best. We gave them a homework. That's my job done. And if they don't do it, it's their problem, and they'll learn slower, but it's their fault.
So it's kind of the way I look at it is that people have their busy lives, and they have their children, and they have their work. You meet language learners who literally don't have time to convert one of their hours on Netflix you know, to doing the work that the language trainer is setting them. You know, anyone can find the time if they have motivation to actually do it.
Which is not a motivation. That shouldn't be a criticism either, because, you know, that 1 hour on Netflix is actually important. That, you know, when you have a busy life and you want to take an hour to relax, you don't want to be constantly working. Like, okay, I finished work, I finished my housework, I finished my extra work that I had to do from my job, and now I'm going to do some work for English too, or like learn a language too. Like, that's just, you know, it's expecting too much of people. So it has to be something that they really feel there's a meaning to doing. They really feel like it's important, but also that they would prioritize it more highly than relaxation time or another chore activity they have to do in their lives. So, you know, you really have to build something that's motivating, that really is motivating. And that's where the difficulty lies, and where a lot of people would just say, okay, that's not possible, because they'll just keep telling me that they don't want to do it. And I've designed really interesting activities and they just don't do them. So I don't know what to do. What more can I do? You know, that's the problem we're having.
Well, let's talk about homework. First question is, let's look at it existentially from a language point of view. You know, I know of some trainers who say, well, my method is enough. You know, the actual class I'm doing with them is enough. They literally tell me that. But why do adult language learners need to do homework? You know, we're not in school anymore. Why do they need to do the homework outside of the class itself?
So we could just talk about the standard trainer and trainee scenario, which is that most adult language trainers don't have the luxury of taking 5 days off work to do a 5-day intensive course, or doing a one full day a week intensive or something like that, which would be sort of required to at least make some small progress in your language level. You know, exposure is the key. The quantity of exposure you have to that language is part of the equation. And learning a language, you have to understand, you know, for anybody who wouldn't be a language trainer, you would need to explain to them, learning a language is an equation, because you so often get people who say like, oh, I just can't learn, I'm not a very good language learner, I've always been bad at it, or oh, I'm too old to learn a language, or something like that. There's lots of excuses where it highlights that people who learn language don't really know the complexity of it, and they boil it down to one thing, like, oh, I must be too old. It's like, well, you know, you can have somebody who's 22 and who's only learning a language because they need to pass a test to get into the school they want to go into, but they don't really care about English. And you can have somebody who's 65. And, you know, this like video I posted on LinkedIn a while ago, it was like this beautiful video of the granddad in, oh, I can't remember where, like Finland or something, some, you know, faraway country, living in the middle of nowhere, who's taking an English course, you know, with a book, and he's learning all these words on his own at home and desperately trying to do the self-study part. Because, as you see in the end, it's because his granddaughter's coming to visit for the first time, and she's part of a, you know, I guess his daughter is married somebody who's English speaking, and so then it means he can actually speak, you know. And so he's like, hi, I'm your grandfather. And it's just like, it had me in tears. But that 65-year-old man will learn language a hell of a lot faster and more effectively than the 22-year-old who's only doing it for an exam, because there are so many variables. Because there's the emotional state of that guy, why he's learning. There's, you know, he does have a variable, which is there's no live trainer contact. So he has to do self-study, but it means he has to do a lot of self-study to compensate for the fact that he's not actually having live exposure. So he's practicing looking in the mirror, basically, like, or sitting in the bus or something like that. You know, he's just speaking out loud like a crazy person. So that's one variable as well. How much contact do you have with an actual trainer? Is your contact with somebody who's an expert, somebody who's actually native or bilingual, or is it with somebody like intermediate in that language who can speak fluently, but, you know, what sort of input are you getting? What level is the input? Are you being given materials that are at your level or just above your level? Or are you actually watching, you know, native videos on Netflix all the time and you're getting a bit lost? So there are loads of different variables in there. But one of the main variables that is the most obvious is the amount of time that you spend learning that language. So if you spend 1 hour a week with the trainer face to face, and that's it, that's great that you have a trainer and you're face to face. But if somebody's spending 5 hours a week doing self-study, they're probably getting a bit more, they're definitely getting more exposure, and they're probably learning a bit more even though they don't have trainer contact, if they can motivate themselves that much. So the ideal would be that you have that live trainer contact and you have that practice face to face. But we can't give up a huge amount of time to do it, as I said. So in between that, you're doing frequent small bits of practice, that today, you know, they give it a name in e-learning today, which is micro learning, which is just doing small nuggets of learning, you know, in lots of frequent intervals. But, you know, it's just common sense that if you do a half an hour in the morning in the train and a half an hour in the morning in the evening when you're coming home on the train of sitting and, you know, going through some quiz with a video online, then you're going to be progressing better because you're going to have lots of exposure. You're going to be exposing yourself to several more hours a week than you normally would. So the principle of homework is to put in place the ability for the learner to expose themselves more to the language than what you're giving them just in your face-to-face lessons, which is probably not enough to make them make realistic progress. That, you know, it's not going to take them 20 years to become intermediate in the language, but maybe a couple of years instead.
So you're saying, if I can, so you're saying that you believe that a motivated learner who is doing 5 hours of self-study a week compared to a possibly less motivated but still a learner who has access to a teacher 1 hour a week will progress quicker because the just exposure time to the language.
We can't say that because, again, there are so many variables that you know, again, 5 hours a week that the granddad was spending was greatly accelerated by his emotional need to learn that language. And so you have to look at all the different types of stimuli and things that go into whether language is acquired quickly or not. What's the context that you're in? How important is it to your daily life? How important is it to, you know, that sort of hierarchy of needs? You know, is it something you actually, are you in a foreign country and so you need that language or else you can't actually even find where the toilet is? Or are you in your native country so it's just for something that's a side project? And so, you know, you can go on and on and on about the variables, but it's to say you can't pin it down to something as simple as that. But given the same scenario or the same context, yeah, if somebody has the ability to self-motivate themselves 5 hours a week, and they're studying 5 hours a week, then yeah, they're going to be learning more vocabulary at least than somebody who is only having 1 hour a week of contact with the trainer. Whether they remember that vocabulary is the other part. And that's arguably the most important part is retention. You know, so if the variables are right, then those 5 hours a week will get them lots of vocabulary from exposure and also retention. That means that vocabulary will stick. And then the next time they're speaking, they're going to have more vocabulary than their colleague who's only done 1 hour. So it's just an example, but just to say, yes, that's right. You will probably not find people who will just do 5 hours of self-study a week. This is the other point, is homework is there. It is called homework because it's normally paired with in-class work. It's normally paired with classroom work. So that helps because you know that there's a system. You're going to have the fun part of being in class mixed with the not so fun part of doing homework, right? Another fundamental truth we need to accept is that the homework is never as fun as sitting with the teacher. It's never as enjoyable as sitting with the teacher. So it only really works as a pair, you know, the good for the bad. You have to take a little bit of boring work to be able to come back and get the good fun part with the teacher.
Okay, so why are teachers so bad at creating homework, do you think?
Yeah, so I like this question because it's, you know, it's quite simplistic to say that teachers are bad at creating homework. I think teachers think that they're good at creating homework because creating homework is not that much different than creating in class work in terms of you've got some sort of pedagogic objective, you've got the content and you've got questions or some sort of guide that's leading the learner towards discovering the vocabulary in that content or the grammar point within that content. So when you're in class with the learner, you're physically and vocally guiding them towards the point. When they're at home, it has to be designed such that they can get there on their own. So the rubric has to be right to be able to guide them there on their own. Most teachers are able to do that just from experience. You know, we're also, as language teachers, very often experienced as language learners as well. So we know how important it is to work at home and also how important it is that the work at home has coherent and like clear rubric. So it's easy to follow and it's easy to get to the end. If you reach the middle of the homework and you say, oh, that doesn't make sense, that's not right, and you don't have anyone to ask about it, then you might just stop because you'll just give up because there's no way, you can't see a way forward. It's a puzzle with bad instructions. And so the instructions have to be right. The rubric has to be right to get them to the end. So I think most teachers are pretty good at that from experience. The thing that we're not doing is we're not considering when the learner gets home and tries to think, you know, I should do my homework. I really should do my homework. We're not including very often that key component in there that would push them towards doing it. Or we don't know the key component that would push them towards doing it. And that's what I've been doing the last couple of years, is really trying to dig deep and find where is that missing component. And it's actually, you know, it hits you in the face one day when you realize most e-learning out there, when I was doing conferences, going to conferences and speaking to e-learning creators and providers, most of them are designed in a way to make the e-learning fun with additional features. So the best e-learning platforms today are the ones that have gamification, which is the idea that you can turn the learning into a kind of a game with quizzes and points and badges and rewards and stuff like that, competing against your colleagues on a leaderboard and all this sort of stuff. And you realize that it's all a big smokescreen to try to distract the learner from the fact that this is an actually fundamentally boring thing to do. You wouldn't need points in games if the content and the learning was actually inherently fun. And you realize that it's not. And it's another truth bomb that when we're teaching language, we forget that learning a language is not fun. Learning a language is actually boring. Sitting with a teacher and talking to a teacher and discussing through which the language is learned, that's fun because you like sitting and discussing, you know, exchanging with someone who's traveled a bit, who lived in another country and who doesn't have the same views as you because they're from another culture. That's always fun, right? So that's the interesting part. When you're doing homework, you don't have that, because the teacher might have given you something like, tell me your opinion about this, but you're kind of talking to yourself. So you're not having as much fun. The actual process of learning, sitting down in front of a book and getting new vocabulary and figuring out what it means, that's not fun. That's not actually fundamentally fun. And so we forget that because we're teachers and we actually have so much passion for the process of language learning and language itself that it's easy to trick ourselves into thinking, of course they're going to enjoy it. You wouldn't even question that they would enjoy it. But like, yeah, it's, you know, they're here to learn a language. That's what they want. It's like, that's not necessarily what they want. They know that they have to, or they find some need to do it. But want is a strong word when it comes to language learning. So we need to, if we want not to be bad at creating homework, but if we want to actually create homeworks that get responses, we need to put something in there that leverages that thing that they like, which is speaking with us, that they have to have something in there that will make them feel like we're there almost with them, you know? So for me, over the last 2 years, I've been experimenting with recording myself in video. So at the beginning, I was doing that with WhatsApp, where you can record audio and video directly into the platform. And YouTube, just recording myself on my phone on YouTube and sending the link to my learners. Like, it was a really quick process, just like record, you know, stop, link, share, done. So if you know about the technology, you can do that quite quickly and easily. And that suddenly got me way more replies, because it was no longer, oh, I have this work to do of this boring process. It was, oh, I have a message from that cool, interesting trainer that, you know, you don't have to be big headed about it. It's just like, they think you're cool because you're foreign. So it's really easy to be cool as a language trainer. And it's easy to have people like you. So they're like, oh, I got a message from that person I like. That just socially is going to make people reply. And so they're going to, like in the classroom, inherently learn language, implicitly learn language, because they are feel like they're conversing. They don't feel like they're doing work. So you take away that work feeling from the homework, and then you actually get something that people, you know, home conversation, call it that instead of homework. Maybe that'll work. But that's your answer anyway.
Okay. So hearing you talking about the fact that it's important to make the right homework, and that there are different techniques of doing, different ways of doing it that that will get much better response from the learners is one thing. But if a teacher believes that he's tried all of that and the learners just aren't doing the homework, and that maybe that's actually going to make things more negative, isn't it best just to keep the learner happy and not sell any homework? Just make things clear from the start. You're not going to get homework. We're just going to do face-to-face 1 hour a week, 1.5 hour a week, and leave it at that.
Most people, I think most trainers do that already. And I think it's not something that you necessarily have to change. So, you know, for as long as teaching has existed, learners have probably not really wanted to do homework. You know, when I started, it was photocopies, of course, all the time, photocopies, gap fills and grammar, you know, a photocopy from a grammar book. Okay, we did present perfect today. Here's a photocopy from a grammar book, present perfect. It's like, I've done my job, I'm happy. It depends on your context. You know, and when I started working, there was not really that much importance placed on how much the learners actually learn. And that's another truth bomb. A lot of language training is because it's something that's not regulated and also something that's very difficult to empirically test, you can't be caught out. You're not going to get to the end of a 20-hour training course and someone will say, you haven't taught them 20 hours worth of language. They're like, well, what is 20 hours worth of language, please? So you don't, you know, you're not under that much pressure in terms of accountability for learning. What you're under pressure for is accountability for enjoyment. So the exit interview for that learner is going to be, was your teacher nice? Do you think the materials were good? Do you feel like you've progressed? And it's difficult to say no in that case. It's not, you know, by how many points on the European language scale have you progressed? You know, that's not what you get asked. And learners aren't able to assess that. Trainers aren't able to assess that. Language tests aren't able to assess that. Just to burst a bubble there. It doesn't matter if it's the TOEIC or anything like that. It's not, you know, you're not going to get an accurate measure of how much someone has learned. If you do a TOEIC at the beginning of a training course and a TOEIC at the end, it's not going to tell you what somebody actually really learned. That's just, you know, because it's not quantifiable, really. When you think about the language learning, it's not just the number of words that you learn or the number of grammar points you master. It's also how many social conversational skills you've acquired, how many written skills you've acquired, how many listening sub skills you've acquired. There's a huge number of things that go on as you're learning a language at the same time and very often implicitly. So it's not a quantifiable, measurable thing. So keeping the learner happy and not setting homework is something we already do, because it's easy for us to keep the learner happy just by having nice conversations, giving them what they want, setting homeworks because they feel like they need it, or we know that they need it, but we know they're not going to do it. But we know that they'll still be happy because they'll blame themselves, because we've set the homework, we've given them the photocopy and they didn't do it. So they can't blame us for that.
But isn't it better to not set the homework rather than, you know, setting something that they're not going to do? Yeah.
Then you'll get criticized at the end of the course. And I had this when I was in my training organization. I had that all the time, that some people would say, oh, no, don't give me homework, I'll never do it. And at the end of the course, they would say, didn't give me enough homework. Just cannot trust people to, and because you can definitely quantify the number of homeworks you give. Because if they say, I had 20 hours of training, I was here for 20 weeks, and I only ever got 2 homeworks, then that's something that you'll get called up on by your boss. And if you're a freelancer, you don't have a boss per se, but the learner, him or herself, could call you up and be like, you know, I don't feel like I've progressed. That's the worst. When you get an irrational student who feels like they haven't made progress and they're blaming you for it, they'll just lash out. Even though they don't know that homeworks would have really helped them or not, but they'll lash out and they'll be like, this is your fault. You didn't give me enough homeworks. This was too, you know, you were too relaxed. There was too much talking. And then if you don't talk and you give them a book instead to do, they'll be like, there was too much book work and not enough talking. I needed more role plays. And, you know, you can always get an irrational learner who'll lash out at you. Part of the teacher's job, because we're in an, you know, unregulated and unquantifiable industry, part of our job is to shield ourselves against potential backlash from that complex and slightly uncontrollable process of language learning not quite working out. Because here's another thing, right? I can be a super duper teacher. I can give amazing classes. I can give great homeworks. But if the learner has a psychological problem, and I'm not talking about they're nuts. I'm talking about, that does not mean, that's not very nice. I'm not talking about they have like some sort of diagnosed condition, right? I'm not talking about, oh, it's somebody bipolar or something like that. I'm talking about, this is a person who was traumatized at school by a teacher who told them they were crap at languages. You're never going to speak English. You're crap. You can't, you know, you've got 0 in your exam. You know, the whole class is laughing at you. Then no matter what you get in terms of language input, your brain might just reject it, because you might be just being so much in defensive mode sitting in that classroom that you never take anything in. You're constantly trying to sabotage the activities. I've had that, and all teachers have had that at some point. Somebody who's just trying to sabotage everything you're doing, talking about how, oh, this is silly. This is not how I did it in school. I'm not learning anything. This is a waste of my time. And then they end up just, you know, they stop coming, right? So that we're trying to shield ourselves against that by making sure that we're giving them all the possible things that they could criticize us for. So we're giving them vocab sheets. We're giving them grammar pages. We're giving them tests. If we feel like that's necessary, we give them something like mid-course test, end-of-course test, and we give them homeworks because we feel like that's what we have to do. So it's just one of those kind of dirty secrets of the teaching job.
But it just sounds like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You're damned
if you do homework, they're not going to do it. And if you don't set homework, they're going to complain about it at the end.
No, because you're not, if you set the homework and they don't do it, in theory, that's their problem, because you're the teacher and you've designed pedagogically the homework. And so if they haven't done it, it's because they weren't motivated enough to do it. You know, they, you had an agreement with them as teacher learner that I've given you a homework. Will you do this for next week? Yes, yes. Okay. And so then basically they're the one lying, because they weaseled out of it in the end. So they're the one who would get the blame for that, not you. You would be able to prove that you've given them homework. So it's not your problem.
But if they don't do it, they're not going to improve and progress as much as they should.
And like I said, that's not necessarily something that you're accountable for, because it's very difficult to quantify. And it's really, a lot of the times, it's very subjective to what the learner thinks that they've progressed or not. Even if you tell them they've progressed, they might not feel it. And even though, you know, as a professional, you can test them and see that they can speak better and you're sure. You know, there's not, I mean, I've been working on that a bit too. So there's one thing that you can do there that adds an extra level of accountability to what you're doing, which is that you, when you're doing your initial interview, when you're doing your evaluation with the learner, you can record the evaluation and make sure to put some sort of role play in there. So if this is a professional and they're a receptionist and they need to welcome visitors, then you make sure that you do some sort of dialogue with them in the test to say, okay, we're going to do this and I'm going to record it. You know, hi, how are you doing? I'm here to see Mr. Blah, blah. Okay. And then you have evidence that at the end of the course, if you do like an exit test and get them to do a recording again, you record them on your phone, on your computer, whatever, get their permission, obviously, and then record them doing the same sort of role play again. Even if they come back to you and say, oh, there wasn't enough this, there wasn't enough that, you can say, well, look at these two videos, because, and that's, you know, we're not empiric there, but at least we have something that you can just sit in front of them and be like, you cannot deny, because you can see that this sentence is more structured. You can see that it's clearer. You can see that you're hesitating less. You know, that's a really easy way that you can actually give more accountability. It doesn't answer your question about homeworks, but it at least says, you know, how can we prove that there's been some sort of progress? Now, if you want to do that, that's putting more onus on you to deliver something during the training that's going to make them not just make them happy, but make them really genuinely progress in their language level. You know, a lot of people would argue simply sitting with a teacher, whether you're learning, doing learning activities or not, is going to make you progress, because, you know, sitting in a bar with someone and speaking English is also going to make you progress. So, you know, there's an argument for that, but I, you know, I see the teacher's job as accelerating that progress, using the variables to your advantage. And so you could take responsibility for that, become accountable and do those videos and show them to your learners, and they would not only be happy but also be satisfied that they really learned something. And then that would bring back the importance of actually setting proper homework and having them do frequent small bits of learning in between your face-to-face classes, which is normally all they're able to give, is like a little bit of time every week.
Okay, so you've mentioned the use of videos and micro-learning and WhatsApp. So I know you're a, you know, you think that the paper homework photocopies, you've mentioned that as well, is finished, it's over. Can you just tell us what the difference is for you between so digital homework and online learning, so that our listeners, so the people watching this can really understand the difference between the two?
Yeah, sure. So digital homework and online learning. Digital homework by nature, like I said before, is something that's a complement to a face-to-face class. So it's when you're giving them extra work to do after your face-to-face class or before the next face-to-face class for preparation. And it's something you're giving them online. So, you know, people argue as well about what the whole digital thing is about. Does it have to be on a learning management system or whatever? In reality, digital just means anything on a computer, tablet, electronic device. So, I mean, even if you say, oh, I don't have a smartphone. Yeah, but if I send you a text and that text message asks you a question in English and you text me back, that's also digital homework. You know, you can really boil it down to any kind of digital device, any kind of electronic device through which you could communicate or deliver content. So if you're emailing a PDF to a learner for homework and they have to write down their answers on paper, that's still digital homework, because you've sent it to them digitally. They've seen it through a computer. Even if they print it out and do it, you know, by hand, it's still something you're sending them online. So I expand the digital definition to anything that is delivered through digital means, right? Anything that's delivered through email, okay, or text or whatever. Online learning, on the other hand, is very, very broad term for people learning on the internet. So, you know, online. means on the internet. That means that you're going to a website, you're loading up some sort of application that's connected to the internet. So we're not talking about the old days of Rosetta Stone where you put a CD in your computer and installed software. We're talking about you actually have to connect to the internet. There's some sort of connection. What does that mean? Well, that means that you're probably downloading content. It could be dynamic content. Maybe it changes. Maybe there's a huge bank of content and you only see a few exercises randomly selected for you, or you progress through a really long training course that's being added to all the time or something like that. That means that you're connected to the internet, learning through some sort of activities. So that'll be a site like Duolingo is online learning. Babbel is online learning. And then maybe in between that, maybe, you know, as a complement to that, maybe you do face-to-face classes, but online learning often has the implication that the content and the course that you're following is a kind of self-study course. So it's independent of anything you're doing with a teacher on the side. And very often these kind of things, you'll find teachers have difficulty getting into them, because something like Rosetta Stone or Babbel, it's difficult for a teacher to find a way to integrate that into what they're doing in their teaching. So often learners do that independently from what they're doing in the classroom. And that's like pure online learning, where they're just doing their own thing. The learner's doing their own thing next to what they're doing with the teacher in class. And those two things are not connected, as they would probably be if it was digital homework, because the teacher is deciding what's given, right? The teacher is deciding what sort of activities are given. But of course, there are platforms where you can do online learning where the teacher has assigned a certain activity in the platform. And that's somewhere in between. You know, you're giving digital homework, but it is also defined as online learning because you're on the internet and you're learning something. So I hope that makes sense.
Well, I mean, if the teachers have access or have knowledge about these online platforms such as Rosetta Stone and Duolingo, isn't that just a good alternative to say, here's the license. I've got a special deal for this license with Babbel, with you know, Rosetta Stone, Duolingo, and it's free, but you know, just go and do this while we're not together. Isn't that a good alternative?
Totally. That's what teachers already do. It's good in the sense of what I said before, where the teacher is trying to protect themselves, shield themselves against potential criticism, and also that the teacher might be trying to increase the price of their offer to be able to increase their margin a bit. So in the days now where the price that people pay for training per hour is either stagnating or falling, you know, in France, certainly what people are doing is they're saying, okay, well, I'm going to give you X number of hours of training, but I'm also going to sign you up for Rosetta Stone and you have to pay me a premium for that, you know, not the Rosetta Stone price, but more. So there's a lot of services that offer that to trainers where you can resell their stuff to somebody, make a good margin on top of that, and then use that to offset the lower price you're being paid per hour. So that is totally financially, logistically, makes a lot of sense. For shielding yourself, it makes a lot of sense because you're saying to the learner, I'm giving you more content than what you're going to have with me in the classroom, and it's totally up to you to study it. So it's on the learner if they don't connect. You know, you've shown them how to use it. It's their fault if they didn't connect. So from a point of view of the teacher, just not taking into consideration the overall impact and progress the learner is going to be making, but just taking into consideration making the learner happy, it could go some way to at least making them not criticize you in the end. However, when you look at the end, you would not be surprised when that learner connected for maybe a week, even though they were expected to do 100 hours of connection time in that platform and 100 activities were available to them. They're probably going to have connected a few times and done two or three activities and then stopped. Because when they're on their own and it's not driven by the teacher and really connected to what the teacher's doing, then it's going to be something that they'll lose interest very quickly and they'll stop. And that's universal. That's across the board. It's one thing that Rosetta Stone and Duolingo fight against by using game features, so putting in badges and points and all that kind of stuff. But it's not a fight that they're ever going to win. They're only going to try to increase their statistics to a number that they can market to say, yeah, 80% of our people get motivated to do their work or something like that. They just want to try to get the percentage high enough that they can market it. But in reality, it's just not, you know, it's not humanly possible to make somebody artificially motivated to self-study.
Okay, that makes sense. If we take what you're saying about delivering homework digitally and keeping the face-to-face element, putting it together, it sounds like a lot like you're blending things together, which is, and the whole term of blended learning or blended language learning is something we hear about a lot. Can you just take us through what you think blended language learning is, should be, and once again, why is it being done so badly?
So blended learning is like the obvious next step from what I've just said. If I was a teacher 10 years ago complaining about, you know, I've given them the Rosetta Stone module and they're not doing it, then the logical next step is, okay, forget about this autonomous learning thing. Forget about this self-study. We're going to democratize education and give everybody access. And they're just going to be so motivated. They're going to do all the lessons all by themselves. And, you know, knowledge is just going to be freely available for anyone to learn. Just forget about that for language learning, because it doesn't work for language learning. We know it doesn't work for language learning. So let's try to do something better. We need to have that advantage that I was talking about, that financial logistical advantage of giving people self-study work to do, because it really benefits the trainer to do that. But there has to be a better link so that we can push learners, give them a little extra push to get them to actually complete the work, so that they're not finishing the course saying, hey, you made me pay 200 euros for access to this platform and I only connected to it twice. And yeah, okay, that's your fault, but they might still ask for their money back. So, how do we do that? Well, blended learning would be, don't just access the platform and go willy-nilly doing whatever you want. We have our first face-to-face lesson today. It's going to be about professional meetings. I have identified an exercise on the platform on Rosetta Stone for you to do, and it's exactly about meetings, and there's a video and whatever. So do this as consolidation for what we did today. And then I've identified another activity, which is about presenting your product to clients, and that's what we're going to study next time. So I would like you to do that activity before we see each other next time. So when you come to the next class, you're going to be ready with vocabulary and the grammar that you'll learn within that module to be able to better participate in the activities we do. What that means for the learner in the pitch that you're giving them is they're going to spend more time face-to-face with the trainer doing practical activities and less time with the teacher at the board and the learner just watching silently when they could actually be speaking. The idea is to maximize the amount of time in the lesson the learner is speaking. They don't have a huge amount of time to speak if they're in an individual class, maybe, but if they're in a 2-people group, 4-people group, 6-people group, 10-people group, then that it divides their time where they'll actually be speaking. And that's the most important, is that they open their mouth and practice. So the idea of blended learning is to maximize the possible amount of time that's available in the classroom with the teacher, with that one opportunity per week they have to speak with somebody who's native or bilingual, to get that really good language model and to be able to practice in that context with a native or bilingual speaker. Maximize that time by eliminating all of the demonstrative work, you know, where the teacher is demonstrating something on the board and that nobody is talking. That's, you know, that teacher time, we call that teacher time, teacher talking time, is something we try to avoid and is a hot topic and has been for the last decade. Teacher talking time has to be kept to a minimum because it should be more learner talking time is the most important thing. So blended learning takes that teacher talking time and outsources it to a digital platform that has recorded that teacher talking and just repeats it to every single learner. So you don't have to have a teacher there. It saves money, it saves time, it saves the learner the hassle of sitting and listening to the teacher in a classroom. Now, the thing about why it's being done so badly, so that's a logical solution to the problem of why e-learning is boring and why e-learning is not being completed, why digital homeworks are not being completed or online learning is not being completed. That's a logical solution. But again, it's coming from the perspective of learners must enjoy the language learning process as much as I love language myself as a trainer. It's difficult to not be blinded by that fact, and that poisons so many things and so many decisions that we make as trainers, that we don't even consciously assume it. We subconsciously assume that everybody is just as passionate about language as we are. I remember I used to sit in classes and somebody would ask about a particular word and I'd be like, oh, that's really interesting. Let's look up the etymology of that word. And I would go on the internet and spend like 5 minutes just boring them with the history. Oh, did you know that came from the Vikings when they landed in England or whatever? And I bet you there's people out there listening who would be embarrassed to admit that they do exactly the same thing. We love language so much. We're not just language teachers, we're language lovers, and we want to share that with our learners. And so you automatically subconsciously assume that giving them, you know, pushing them to do work online by making it connected to the work that you're doing in the classroom would just work, because then that's going to give them the right motivation that they need. But again, you are not there when they're at home doing this preparation. They're excited about coming to see you in the class. They're not excited about doing the preparation work that you've given them because you're not there. So once again, if you've recorded yourself, if you've got some sort of video of yourself, audio of yourself, very short thing, just introducing the subject that they can listen to at home, that you can send them, helps to remind them that they have work to do and helps to engage them by thinking, oh, my teacher told me to do it, like just there now, I'm going to go on the internet and do it. You know, I'm going to click the link with the video he sent or she sent and do the homework. Then that's something that you can do better. So that if you do blended learning, but add those elements into it that can make it better, then that's one way that you can improve.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Do you think teachers have time to do that? Literally, because what you're saying is, if we take the thread of all these different, of this conversation we've been having together, you said that homework is a necessary evil of making good progress. It needs to be made fun. They need to feel like there's teacher presence, that it needs to be done digitally. All of these things make a lot of sense. Now, a lot of teachers I know say, oh, I'm just too busy, I don't have time to do these things. I've got to travel in the classes, I've got to prepare my classes, I've got to do the admin, and I've got to have time for me as well. You know, so what do you say to that?
So I've been telling, for the last 2 years, I've been really trying to find a way to get through to teachers about that. And I know, I work with associations here of teachers and here in France and one in Germany as well, where they would admit that their members, even if they offer them free training or free ways to improve, free tools that they can use to improve their training or improve their homeworks, that they generally have quite a low turnout. And it is exactly for that, because freelance trainers are the one who delivers the training, the one who organizes the training, the one who deals with the cancellations and rescheduling, the one who has to give the invoice, chase up the invoice when it's not paid, the one who has to do the declaration to the government of whatever they've earned, and maybe do, like in France, do a declaration to a specific government body of all the hours of training you've done that year and how much you earned and what sort of training it was and all that. You've got a huge amount of work that's not related to what you're that's not sitting in a class with a learner. So, for each hour you teach, you've got at least a couple more hours of preparation, content creation, admin, whatever, organization that are attached to it. So you really don't have a lot of free time. And that's just, that's obvious. Now, the one thing I would say is, even when I was in that situation where I had no free time, the one thing that I was able to do, and this is while I was studying for my Delta, was I was able to read. So I can really highly recommend people read books, the literature that's out there on language training, first of all, just as a way to become a bit more of an expert language trainer. Listen, I've got a podcast that you're listening to that I'm doing to try to give people advice. It's something you can listen to while you're on the train. Do your own sort of e-learning, listen on the train or whatever. But you've got to try to find that internal motivation to really want to improve, to feel like you can improve, to feel like there's ways to improve, because obviously there's always ways to improve. No teacher is perfect. No teaching technique is perfect. There's always new things to learn, always new things to try out. Now, when you've got that foundation in place, that you really feel passionate about the idea of improving and making, not just making your learners happier, but also making the language learning process more effective that you're doing, which is possible, you really can, then go out and start experimenting. I'm a big believer in the lean methodology for business design startups, lean business planning. And what that means is very low resource testing of whether the product that you've got works. So if, for example, I tell you, so I'm going to give you some examples of things that you can do to make your teaching better, right?
Okay.
To make your homeworks better straight away, to make video lessons better, and then to make the subsequent homework way better. If anybody out there is doing video lessons, so doing stuff on Skype or Zoom or Adobe Connect or WebEx or whatever the platform is, you can greatly improve your teaching by trying to start integrating Google Drive and the Google App Suite into what you're doing, because it is a very collaborative, very online, very easy platform. So Google Drive is there to create a folder for the learner that you're teaching or the group that you're teaching, and to start putting materials in there related to different lessons that you're doing. So a folder for the group, and within that, folders for each lesson, each day that you see them, right? Then once you've got that day in there, the first day that you see them, you're going to put in a Google Doc And that Google Doc is it's like Microsoft Word, but it's on Google, it's online. It's going to contain any important information from that class, the links that you need them to go to do revision, to study grammar points, the vocabulary that you taught them, maybe examples of some mistakes that they made you can put in there for them to correct for homework. Any kind of, you know, information, important information that they can take away from the class should be going into the Google Doc. Then you can also do, if you're teaching online, we can do what's called the Google Drawing, which is another Google app. It's free. Just type in Google Drawing on the internet and you'll find it. I'll put a link onto this podcast. You can get there that way. It's a whiteboard where you can draw, scribble, write text, draw shapes, do whatever. And it's collaborative again. So you can either just save that into the drive or have your learners come in and edit it. And the edits will be seen by everybody. It fixes that whole problem of sending a PowerPoint to someone, having them update it, send it back. If you're working with multiple people, you're going to end up with four versions of the same PowerPoint. You know, you put in your corrections and then send that back to the person again. And just, you know, Google, it's all in one place. And it's automatically updated every time someone's in there. If you go into it and you edit it, and someone else edits it at the same time, you'll see them edit it. You won't just like create two versions. You'll see them in there editing. It's like you can communicate through it. So Google Drive to organize everything, Google Docs to get your information in there, Google Drawings to draw stuff, share with your learners afterwards. And then YouTube, either on your phone or if you have something on your computer to record, so you can record parts of your lesson if it's in a classroom or parts of the Skype call. You can actually record, you know, Skype, you can record. That's a new feature. You can actually do screen recording, so you can record what you're saying with the other person. Zoom, obviously, you can do it. Adobe, obviously, WebEx, probably. I haven't tried it in a long time. But that, you know, doing a recording, not necessarily the whole class, but of the key parts of the class, you know, stop the learner, be like, okay, I'm going to record this because I think this is important. I'm going to tell you about this grammar point. I'm going to record it. I'm going to put that recording into the file, into your file, into your Google Drive. Record the role plays that you're doing with them, put them in there. At the end of the class, record a video of yourself introducing the homework. Record a video of yourself modeling the sentences that you're asking them to do for homework in the Google Doc. And then you're creating a Google Doc with the sentences for homework that you want them to do, possibly based on what you did in the classroom, mistakes that they made, or something they need to prepare for the next lesson. Whatever it is, get yourself in there in a video and put that video in there. Either record a video literally like MP4 and put it into the Google Drive, or record a video on YouTube, which is my favorite way of doing it, and then put that video link into the Google Doc at the top of the questions. And like, if you go, like, you know, I've sent out links to a lot of people of my lesson plans that I've been putting out there that I published for people to have a look at exactly these kind of methods that I'm talking about. So I'm going to put the link to that in the description of the video. But I have a whole bunch of lessons that I made from one TED video where I recorded myself in YouTube introducing the video, and also recorded myself in there modeling the role play that I wanted them to do at the end, and asking the learner to record themselves as well. So these are the kinds of activities that suddenly, it's not homework, it's not just static, I'm sitting doing self-study kind of work. It's genuinely like interesting, communicative, productive tasks that you would like to do in class or outside of class. You know, there's not that much of a difference between what you're doing if you're recording yourself and listening to the teacher. There's not that much of a difference what you're doing for homework than what you're doing inside class. Now, it's more work for the trainer. So why did I say do it in a lean way? The lean way is to design yourself a simple experiment. Say, okay, well, one learner, I'm going to try recording some parts of it and putting it into Google Drive, and then I'm going to try making that into a homework, and we'll see how it goes. And you get that learner on board. It has to be somebody who really likes that kind of concept and they like trying new things and they're not going to complain about it. Start that experiment up and you know, agree with yourself that you're going to review the results of that really carefully. Look at how they replied, how quickly did they reply, how elaborate was their reply, and then try it again. Did they also do the second homework? Try it again. Did they do the third homework? Or did they start losing interest? Is that maybe because I'm not making the activities varied enough? You know, really try to get in there with a small scale experiment. Don't start suddenly making a Google Drive folder for all the current learners you have, and then you do something stupid and they all start not liking it and getting annoyed at you. You know, bad idea. Do it with one learner, then do it with two, and then do it with four, and then do it with six or whatever. But, you know, increase slowly and make sure that the approach that you're using is working, and then start rolling that out to other learners. And in the end, after like, I don't know, a few months time of doing this, you might have a really solid, interesting, motivating way of doing outside of classwork that all of your learners are responding well to. And suddenly you just become a super teacher. And when they're talking to other people about your classes, they're going to be like, oh God, yeah, it was so interesting because like you did the classroom stuff and then also the stuff they gave me to do at home. Like I've never done anything like that before. And that's something that creates amazing word of mouth when you're trying to market yourself. That's what we rely on as teachers is word of mouth. So when people start saying, yeah, it was like nothing I've ever done before, then that's great word of mouth. And that's something you can really use to mix it up as a language trainer.
Okay. Sounds, all that sounds pretty cool. Should we stop there then?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I think we've said it all. So I hope people get a lot out of this and hope they take away some of this advice and use it for themselves. And, you know, if anybody wants to get in touch with me or Joss to talk about anything more, you know, ask questions or discuss anything, leave any comments, you know, just get in touch. We're on LinkedIn. I'll put the links to our LinkedIn profile in the description. You can get in touch with us and let us know what you think. And yeah, looking forward to the next time we get together, Joss.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much, Richard.
No worries. Thanks. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out this podcast. And if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.